Hi, this is Patty Peltakos, the Monday host of A Public Affair. If you like what you hear on WORT, please consider sending us a donation of whatever amount. And remember to listen to the A Public Affair podcast. Thanks. Bye.
6'6" above sea level. I grab the mic because I like to take you to another mental level. Low power frequency radio modulation. The big sound from underground. We bring the truth to places truth is never heard before. We bring the
Good afternoon, and welcome to the Monday, May 17th, 2021 edition of A Public Affair. My name is Patty Peltakos, and I'll be your host this hour. I am thinking of today's show as a double feature. It's a double feature because in today's two-part show, our guests are documentary filmmakers whose films are part of the same ticket at this year's Wisconsin Film Festival. In the first part of the hour, Madison-based filmmaker Greta Wing Miller will be talking about filmmaking and her film, How to Form a Union. How to Form a Union takes the viewer through the process of how Willie Street co-op workers organized their workplace. In 20 minutes, you can get a sense for what you will need to do to form a union in your workplace. In the second part of the hour, Oakland, California-based filmmaker Yael Bridge will be talking with us about her new film, The Big Scary S-Word. The Big Scary S-Word is socialism, and Bridge's film looks at the history and revival of socialism in the U.S. Wisconsin, yes, that's the state of Wisconsin, is a major character in The Big Scary S-Word, along with a few other human characters who are from Wisconsin and who you will recognize. And unions play a role in this film, too. But first, to How to Form a Union. Greta Wing Miller, welcome to A Public Affair.
Thanks, Patty.
Oh, thanks so much for joining me today. So, Greta, why did you decide to make a movie about the Willie Street Union effort and title it How to Form a Union?
Sarah Andrews and I have a mutual friend, who Kelly Osborne, who introduced us. And apparently the two of them thought that what the Willie Street staff was going through would make a good sort of tool for other groups that might be interested in organizing their workplace. So,
and Greta, I need to ask you to back up for a minute and tell me who Sarah is.
Oh, Sarah Andrews is one of the people interviewed in the film, and she was the mutual friend of ours. She worked at
And at the time
she worked at the North Store, the North Willie Street co-op. Mm-hmm. She turned me on to another staff member, Bjorn Thorson, who worked at West at the time, and then Andrew Cernatinger, who was instrumental in the earlier unionizing effort in 2014. Those are my interviewees. And Carl O'Neill, who is an old-time union steward and organizer.
Uh-huh. And was Carl involved in any way in the union campaign at Willie Street?
No, no.
No, okay. No. Okay. So I was also wondering, Greta, are you a Willie Street co-op member?
Oh, yeah. Since I moved here in 94, I've been a member.
And have you ever participated in organizing a union yourself?
No, I haven't. But I was in a union in New York City, the IA-771 Film Editors Union. So I did go to meetings and, you know, participated in that way. Reaped the benefits of being in a union. The biggest benefit I found was that I didn't have to argue with clients about money or even discuss it. The union rate was the union rate, and I loved that.
And so I take it you are not part of a union right now. Is that correct?
That's correct. No, I'm not.
No. I mean, could you still be a member of some union of filmmakers? I mean, would that be possible, or is that just not doable here in Wisconsin?
You know, I did ask that question of the Stagehands Union, because that is the same, different local, same sort of group of people that mm-hmm. were in New York, but it doesn't include, they don't have any editors here in Madison. So theoretically, yes, I could join, what is it, IA77, God, I can't remember the number, 725 maybe?
That's okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So Greta, did you have an idea for what the film would be before you actually started working on the film, or did that evolve as you were doing the interviews and learning more about this process?
That all came about as I was doing the interviews. And as I did the interviews and they laid out the process, that why they wanted a union, what the problems were. By that time, UE was already in the picture. So the UE has on their website a really very nice PDF of 5 easy steps to create a union. So I used that as a kind of a template to fit the Willie Street story into, given that Sarah liked the idea of it being a tool for other groups. So it sort of always started out as a how-to movie.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so how long did it actually take you to put this film together? I mean, watching it, it is a 20-minute film, but I'm guessing that there was a lot that didn't actually go into the movie itself. Yeah. So could you talk a little about that?
Yeah, I started shooting in August of 2019. And pretty much had this version completed by March when everything shut down. We were planning some fundraising work in progress screenings in March 2020, and that, of course, all fell apart very quickly. But it, you know, because that was Sarah's idea to make a how-to movie, it was always sort of in that vein. I did like filming at the co-op. I never, you know, when you're grocery shopping, you're paying attention to your grocery list or thinking about what you want to make for dinner. And I think we don't spend a lot of time watching what the employees, what the staff is doing. And they're everywhere. They're everywhere all the time. Busy little beavers. And if they're not in our view in the store, they're back in the loading dock, you know, at 5 o'clock in the morning, unloading huge trucks of organic produce. And because I have been kicked out of grocery stores in the past, I did quite a few videos for an organics watchdog group called Cornucopia Institute, for which footage mm-hmm. inside the co-ops was, you know, was obvious, and always got hassled about having my big camera. So Willie Street, for this movie, I just was a little old lady with my cell phone, shooting product like everybody does. Everybody is taking pictures and sending them back home saying, is this what you meant? You know, when you put this on your list, is this what you wanted? And now I've forgotten your original question.
That's okay.
God knows.
So did you use a big camera for the interviews, or did you shoot those using your iPhone also?
No, the cameras are done with a regular video camera.
So did it feel weird to you being in the co-op shooting on your iPhone, filming people? Did that feel a little strange?
Yeah, it felt very strange. And I always looked for some employee that I knew. There were quite a few people who knew what I was doing along the way, because I would tell them and ask their permission to film what they were doing. And, very strange. Not to get permission. I mean, the rule is you don't really need, quote unquote, a written permission to film somebody. But the sort of rule is that if they can see the camera and they can get out of the way of it, you don't need a release. But I had no camera that anybody could see. So that was awkward. And Sarah did post a link to the film on the internal email link, just to see if anybody objected, didn't want to be in it. And we didn't get any nays.
Okay. If you are just joining us, you're listening to the Monday, May 17th, 2021 edition of A Public Affair. This is Patty Peltakos, and I'm your host this hour. Today's show is devoted to two documentary filmmakers whose films are part of this year's Wisconsin Film Festival. In this part of the show, Madison-based filmmaker Greta Wing Miller is talking about the making of her movie, How to Form a Union, about how workers at Willie Street Co-op organized their union. If you have a question or comment for Greta, you can give us a call at 608-256-2001, extension 9, or you can email us at talk@wortfm.org. So Greta, given that you have now made this movie, and of course you have other movies you're making, I was wondering if you could tell me, how did you actually become a filmmaker? What led you to making films?
Oh boy. My father was a professional photographer, and so I've been around cameras my whole life, and actually asked for a camera for my 7th birthday, for which I got a Brownie Hawkeye. And,
And film! Real film!
Yeah, actual, real film. My dad always had the latest thing, you know. He had an 8mm camera for which he made little industrial films for his company. And but in the early 70s, I was living in St. Louis and did an internship at the PBS station in St. Louis. It was a production internship, so I did everything around the station, I assisted everybody around the station. And one of the things I assisted with was a film that the station was producing, for which I was assistant director, and that basically meant I walked around the set with a clipboard, taking complaints from actors about how come they haven't done my scene yet, and checking with the camera people. I didn't like it at all. But a couple weeks later, I walked into a room that was normally fairly empty in the station, and there was a guy sitting at this incredible control. Well, the only thing I had to compare it with was the control room, and he had he was on this machine that had obviously two monitors, and he was doing something amazing with his hands. The monitors were obviously the film that I didn't like working on a couple weeks earlier. And what was he doing? It was just magical to me. I asked him, who are you and what are you doing? And he said he was Dave and he was the film editor. And within five months later, I was at NYU to become a film editor. So I was a film editor in New York City until 1994 when we moved to Madison. And that just didn't really exist. I did edit Eric Gunnison's film On Film back in the late 90s. And that was fabulous. But along the way, I also was, you know, editing video as well. But once the revolution in desktop video came live, 1999, say, you know, you had to, I'll back up. I did make a couple of independent films in New York City. The lab costs are outrageous, so what I would do as an editor was attach my little reel of film to the end of the paying client's reel of film, send it through the lab, and then that's how I got my work print. Just once it came back from the lab, I just cut my section off of the paying clients. And probably, I don't know where I learned that kind of larceny. I probably thought it up myself. But then I never had to actually print the films because I could transfer them to video pretty easily, transfer the edited work print to video. And that was how I made a couple of little independent films in New York. But once I was in Madison and I was production coordinator at WYOU, community production coordinator at WYOU in the late 90s, for which I was teaching editing and helping people put together their shows for the station. But, you know, you have to do everything in desktop video. I didn't have the luxury of just being the editor, which is how I sort of self-identify. And as we always said when I was an assistant editor in New York, the best directors had been editors. You know what you need to shoot to tell the story. I had a good enough eye.
So do you spend more time editing than you do filming?
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
On How to Form a Union, just give me a sense of how much time you spent actually filming and then how much time you put in actually editing, if you're able to do that.
Not time in terms of hours. I mean, I had my cell phone with me every time I went to the co-op. I'd make special trips to go to, you know, instead of going over to Willie Street, which was, you know, the East Side store, which is my closest store, you know, I would take a trip out to Middleton so that I could both shop at the West Side store and get footage. Do the same with North. Sometimes I needed, the external shots of the buildings I had to do very quickly before winter set in. Like I said, I think I started in August 2019. There's not much footage that I didn't use. I would say I don't have an extra shot of a staff member doing something. In terms of the interviews, there's lots left over. Andrew's story of the unionization effort in 2014 deserves its own film. And the fact that it's...
Will you make one?
Oh, my God. I don't think so. I don't think anybody really wants to relive it. I think he got it out of his system by telling me the story. It was just one bad luck happening after another. One thing, though, the management of the co-op did hire the same union buster both times 5 years later. And I think that guy whose name I can't remember. Yeah, go on.
Oh, I was just going to ask, so what is your hope for the film, Greta? I mean, it's now showing at the Wisconsin Film Festival. It's going to be showing at the Workers Unite Festival in New York City in October. If people are not able to see it at the film festival, how will they be able to actually view it? And where do you hope it will find its way?
Oh, boy. Well, you know, it was always intended to be a tool for other groups, and I'm not sure, I haven't really thought about how to make that happen yet. I sort of expected to have some support from the UE, although I haven't heard back from any of them. I haven't actually made a push to try and distribute it, but it's probably just going to live on the internet for free, like most of the other films I've made have. Like I said, I'm very bad at fundraising, so while I have a couple of, in fact, I have a couple of films up on Vimeo for on demand. They don't get rented because I don't do any advertising about it. And I haven't done any trying to fundraise from the union. But I can imagine that since we intended it to be a work, you know, a tool for other groups, that it should really just be up there and be... have people be notified that it's there if they want to see it. A couple of the Andrew and Carl from the film both have expressed that there is no other film like it that follows a campaign through all the steps. So that's encouraging for me to hear from them. Because they're in the midst of the union organizing world. But so far it just hasn't, I mean, I haven't done anything about that yet. I can't, with the two film festivals, I can't really put it out there for public screenings.
I see. Okay. Well, are you planning to go to New York City in October for that screening?
Oh, I'd love to.
Especially now that COVID has kind of eased up a bit.
Yeah, that would be a fabulous reunion to do. This little movie in the Wisconsin Film Festival is kind of, it sits there sort of like the newsreel in front of Yale's film. if in the olden days when you used to watch a newsreel before. I hope it's not the cartoon before her film.
Well, Greta, we are at the end of our section of the show. So any final thoughts and comments for WORT listeners that you'd like to share with us?
Oh, I can't... I can't think of anything that hasn't been covered about this little movie. I hope people support the staff at the Willie Street Co-op and that things continue to go well for them and their union, UE 1186.
Right. Well, thank you so much for joining me on today's show, Greta.
Thank you, Patty. Talking about it.
I've just been, you're welcome. I've been talking with Greta Wing Miller, whose documentary, How to Form a Union, is now playing as part of this year's Wisconsin Film Festival. And you can find out more at wifilmfestival.org. And now to filmmaker Yael Bridge. Yael's documentary, The Big Scary S-Word, is also playing at this year's Wisconsin Film Festival. And Yael, I do hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly. Welcome to A Public Affair.
Hi, thank you. Happy to be here. And you sounded great.
Oh, wonderful. Okay. So, Yael, why did you make a documentary about socialism in the U.S.?
Well, I guess the short answer is I was just very curious. I've been making political films for many years, and then I was just really surprised, as I think many people were, by Bernie Sanders' success in the 2016 primary. And all of a sudden, there were a lot of people that were either calling themselves socialists or were comfortable voting for a socialist, you know, in the order of many millions, which seemed crazy and shocking to me. So I thought about making the film to see what was going on. Like, why was this such a phenomenon right now?
So you interviewed a ton of people for The Big Scary S Word. You've interviewed scholars, an incredible number of scholars, including Cornel West, Eric Foner, Richard Wolff. You interviewed journalists, including Wisconsin's John Nichols and also Naomi Klein, Anita Zeidler, the daughter of Milwaukee's last socialist mayor, and two younger socialists, a Virginia politician named Lee Carter and Stephanie Price, an Oklahoma teacher. Why did you decide to interview such a range of people for the film?
We interviewed a lot of people and even more people who didn't even make it into the film, unfortunately, as documentary filmmaking goes. I think it was really important to me to look at the movement and try and contextualize it historically, and then looking at it on a national scale. I think I like watching films that are about individual peoples, but I think, I didn't want to do a film that was just looking at Bernie Sanders or AOC or looking at these small people. It really is a movement, and defies like stereotypes or categorization. You know, I think people talk a lot, at least at the time or even now, you know, oh, that's like a socialism is an elitist thing, or it's a white person thing, and it's just on the coast. It wouldn't work in any of these other places, which of course is from Wisconsin. You know that's just clearly not true. And so it felt important to you know, give people voices to be able to speak for themselves.
So I was really curious, did you have an outline for the film in mind before you actually started the interviews, or did the film start to come together only after you had done some of the interviews?
No, we definitely had an outline. You know, I was not a socialist, and this was all new information to me. I'm a filmmaker. And so the film really began with many, many months of research and reading as much as I could, and talking to people and sort of gathering information. And after I did that for 6 months or so, I had a good idea of what I thought were the important pieces. And so I was able to make an outline of just saying, you know, I want to have these sections covered or these ideas, these historical moments. And then it's an issue of casting and saying, you know, like I knew I wanted to have something about unions in the film, but I had no idea that year was going to be the year of the Red State Revolt and all of the, you know, there would be so many teacher strikes going off that year. I had no idea. So, you know, you can make an outline of a plan, and then you have to be flexible with what the universe provides you.
Right. Well, the universe certainly seems to have provided you with a ton of interviews, which
yes,
I thought was great. I mean, how long did those interviews take you?
Oh, a long time. I think each interview, I could go a long time. I think the shortest is going to be an hour and hour, I think, is when people are really on a time crunch and they say, I can only give you an hour. But unless someone cuts me off, I'll mm-hmm. go for, you know, 3 hours or so, just because you don't, I mean, like I said, this was new information to me. So I'm both trying mm-hmm. to, you know, I can go into an interview with like, these are my list of questions and these are the things that I want you to talk about. And also, I'm just a curious person and you never know what direction someone's going to say. And they're going to say something like, oh, well, tell me more. That's confusing to me. And then it just goes on and on. Long, lots of interviews.
Right. So Wisconsin turns out to be a pretty important character in the big scary S word. And I'm wondering, how did that happen?
Yeah. I don't think you can tell the story about socialism in America without talking about Wisconsin. And like I said, I started by doing research, and the first book that I read was John Nichols' book, The S Word. And so that was very formative in my mind of thinking about socialism in America. And so I reached out to him, and he was just incredibly generous and fantastic with his time and helping me process my own ideas and guiding my thinking. And I always conceived of Wisconsin as sort of a major character in the film. of just, you know, when you would list out the characters, like you said, we have a teacher in Oklahoma, we have a state legislator in Virginia, we have the state of Wisconsin. Like this is an important part of the story.
So how much time did you spend here in Wisconsin? And did you come back and forth more than once?
Yeah, I came back and forth, I think, a few times. We were there, I don't know, maybe a week, maybe a little bit more in total, because we were in different places. You know, we were in Milwaukee, we were in Madison, we went up to Ripon, and we filmed, oh gosh, I'm blanking on the name of the reenactment that happens in the summer in Milwaukee. It didn't make it into the film, which was pretty heartbreaking for me. But we filmed a lot more in Wisconsin than ended up being in the film, because, you know, we wanted to keep the film short. So with 82 minutes, I think we zipped along, but there's obviously so much more to say.
Right. Were you here during the winter?
No. I missed the Wisconsin. We were there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Is it very bad?
So what was...
Did I miss something important?
It can be very cold.
Yeah.
It really... Yeah. It can be cold and snowy.
Yeah. We missed that.
Yeah. And so what was the impact of COVID on the film? I mean, were you... Had you finished filming by the time COVID happened? And did COVID kind of change what you were thinking of as you were working on the film?
Yeah, we had finished filming, and we had finished mostly editing, and we were set to premiere at a festival last April. And so it became clear that festival was not going to happen. And so we went back into the edit and edited, tried to make lemonade out of lemons and tried to edit for another few months. So we were able to put more time into the film and then include just a little bit of COVID. So we have a section talking about healthcare and how COVID really makes clear how we are all connected. And when one person is sick, we all get sick. And the strain that it was putting on our healthcare system. So I was glad that we were able to put that section in. And then, you know, it's just been a really, I mean, it feels trivial to talk about the impact of COVID on a film when it is killing hundreds of thousands of people. But the impact mm-hmm. on the film was big. I mean, we were able to finish, but the landscape this past year for bringing a film out has been really hard. And festivals have all been virtual, like this one. You know, in a dream world, in another year, you know, we would have just, we would be there in person and that would be fantastic. And so the film has been coming out, but only on online virtual festivals. So I'm not able to go and talk to people in person and attend Q&As and, you know, engage with the audience, which really was the design of the film, to be able to talk to people.
Mm-hmm. If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Monday, May 17th, 2021 edition of A Public Affair. This is Patty Peltakos, and I'm your host this hour. Today's show is devoted to two documentary filmmakers whose films are part of this year's Wisconsin Film Festival. And in this part of the show, filmmaker Yael Bridge is talking with us about her documentary, The Big Scary S-Word, which the Wisconsin Film Festival describes as, quote, an in-depth explanation of the fundamentals of progressive politics and the current state of socialism in the United States. So if you have a question or comment for Yael, you can reach us at area code 608-256-2001, extension 9. You can also email us at talk@wortfm.org. And get in touch with us so that Yael does have some time to interact with people who may have seen the film. We especially want to hear from you if you've watched it. So Yael, in the film, one of the writers you interviewed, I believe it was Eric Blanc, talks about how when socialism is strong, unions are strong. And he also talks about how McCarthyism, yet another part of Wisconsin, broke that bond. And I was wondering, as you were making this film and talking to all the people that you talked with, and especially the young socialists, Lee Carter and Stephanie Price, did you see those bonds maybe starting to strengthen and to change?
The bonds between socialism and unionism?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I think what Eric Blanc, I mean, the question of the relationship between unions and socialism is rich, and there are, many, many books and hours spent trying to tease them apart. But I think what is clear is when we look historically, when unions have been strong, socialism has been strong, and vice versa. And when one is weak, the other is weak. And as we're seeing a resurgence in these socialistic ideas, we're also seeing unions grow. And, you know, you couldn't see that more clearly than with Stephanie, who was not a socialist by any means going into the teacher strike in Wisconsin. And then just by virtue of collective action and organizing and feeling, you know, that deep connection with her other coworkers, that translates very, very seamlessly into an adjusted worldview that is more socialistic.
So when you started following Stephanie, she's a teacher, and she's going on strike, and she's just really upset with what is happening with her schools in the state of Oklahoma. So how much time did you spend with Stephanie and kind of following her transition from being a teacher, being somewhat upset to becoming a socialist?
A lot. I spent a lot of time with Stephanie. yeah, we're very good friends now. She, Oklahoma was the second strike of that strike wave. And so West Virginia went off, and I was going to go down. And by the time I was organized and ready to go, they had just resolved and won their strike. And so as soon as I heard rumblings that Oklahoma might be next, I got on a plane and went out to Oklahoma and got connected to Stephanie. And we really hit it off. And I was there for, I don't think I was there for the whole strike. I think I went home. I live in Oakland, and then had to go and then went back to Oklahoma. So maybe that was like over 2 weeks, I think. And then we filmed with her when she went to Chicago for the socialism conference. She came out to Oakland when the Oakland teachers went on strike, and we filmed that that as well, which is not in the film. But we filmed quite a bit with Stephanie to get that arc, which like I said, I'd read in books about how when you are involved in unions and strikes and stuff, that radicalizes you and shifts your politics more to the left, generally speaking. So that was something that we were anticipating. And then And then that, and then that's what happened with Stephanie quite clearly.
And are you still in touch with her?
I am. Yeah. Yeah. We're quite close. Yeah.
And so she's now the head of her local union. Is that right?
She was vice president of her local union in Oklahoma, and she has since moved. So she does not live in Oklahoma anymore.
Ah.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was hard. I mean, the state was defunding schools for such a long forever. And so the strike, I hope it was clear in the film, the strike conceded. They did not get their demands met. They got a raise before on threat of a strike. They were able to get a raise, but then they went on strike because they weren't striking just for a raise. You know, they wanted their schools funded, and that didn't happen. And so, you know, there's a huge problem in Oklahoma of just teachers fleeing. They can't live in the state. Why would you do that? You can just go, 100 miles away, go to Texas, and the schools are better funded, and your salary is going to increase by like $5,000-$10,000, you know? So, it's a really tough place, to be teaching in public education. And so, kudos to her and all the other teachers who tough it out, because it's not easy.
I think it's safe to say that we have a similar situation here in Wisconsin.
Yes. Well, I'm sorry. I don't mean to be telling you. You guys know all about it.
That's okay. It's here too. Wow. And you also followed Lee Carter, a young politician in Virginia. And so was it pretty much kind of the same thing? You met him, and then you just ended up spending a ton of time filming him as he was doing his work as a representative?
Yeah, I knew. Well, when you asked me before, like, did I have an outline? And I knew I wanted I wanted an elected official, and I wanted someone involved in unions. Like, those two storylines were really important to me to cover when we look at how to enact social change. Like, those are the two avenues that I thought were worth exploring. And at that point, which was, gosh, I don't know, like three-ish years ago, Lee had just won, and he was the first one. Since then, we now have socialists on the floor of Congress. That was not the case. Lee was a few years ahead of them, and so he was the guy to follow. And he welcomed us with open arms. He said, "Come on, like, let's see. I'll show you what it's like." And so that was great. And he, it's an interesting story and where he lives in Virginia, because he flipped a seat. You know, we talk in the news. You hear a lot about socialists. When the people are running from, they switch, like AOC, she didn't switch a seat from Republican to Democrat. It was Democrat, and she just brought it more progressive. And people will frequently say, oh, that's just what socialists do. They're not moving it. But actually, he did. He flipped. It was the seat of the House Majority Whip, which was really impressive that he was able to win and take it over. And then since then, I think there's two other socialists now who are in the state legislature with him. And so I think it's really important that he shows not only can you run on these progressive policies and win, even in a conservative district, but being out there and being, the lone voice, which you can see from his experience, is very hard and very isolating. I can't really imagine doing that personally. You just have to have such a conviction, courage of your convictions. But you do that, and even if you can't get any of your stuff passed, it changes the discourse. And he was able to bring more people in the next go round of elections, and flip the whole state. Now the whole state is blue. So I don't want to give him all the credit, but I think he did a great job and is now now running for governor, I believe.
Mm-hmm. So in the movie, you combine archival footage, like, archival and still photographs of things here in Wisconsin, with the interviews. So were you spending a lot of time? I mean, you talked at the beginning about doing so much research. when you're doing this research, are you spending time, in addition to reading, just looking at photos to give you a sense of kind of what it looked like in the past?
Yeah, definitely. Looking in photographs, looking in books, looking, you know, I worked with these great archival producers who are here, Rachel and Jen, and I would talk to them and say, this is the subject I'm interested in, or this area, this time period, and they will do like an initial pass and then just collect all of this media for me to sort through and look at. And then, of course, working with my editor and figuring out which are the right images for which section. And also looking at other films. I mean, I think what was incredibly shocking, and is still shocking to me about this film, is that there wasn't one that came before it. You know, there's no 6-part Ken Burns miniseries on PBS about the history of American socialism. There's just not anything, or even, you know, these figures. There was a film that came out about Eugene Debs just 2 years ago, and Bernie Sanders famously made one that with some other friends of his that you can see on YouTube that I think he made in the 70s. But really, you know, this subject matter and this history, which is so important to our nation and understanding who we are and how we got here, is just not represented. So, you know, I was really scraping the barrel trying to look for other films to be just even some guidance on what's been covered, what hasn't. I don't want to duplicate what someone else has done, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so could you talk a little about the role of animation in the film and why you included animation?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think about that in hindsight. Why did I include animation? There were certain things that I thought were really like economic concepts that I thought were important to understand, and that someone sort of saying to you, oh, capitalism is really recent. It used to be like this. And then that felt really dry and inaccessible for me. I would have a hard time tracking when I'm listening. And then I also spent several years working with Robert Reich, who was the labor secretary under Clinton. And now he has a nonprofit.
Yes.
Yeah, making these social media videos that are like 3 to 5 minutes long, where he'll talk about like the earned income tax credit or immigration issues or whatever they are. And those have animation, and just really being inspired by him and seeing how well just like a little pie chart, you know, a little drawing that you can do on a whiteboard in 30 seconds really clarifies for you. What these ideas are, and these are complicated. And so, yeah, it was the interview that I did with Vivek Chipper where he was explaining the genesis of capitalism. And I thought, I need this animated. Like, I think this is a really important thing, but I need to see this visualized because what you're saying is dense. So we had a few of those.
Yeah, well, I thought it was really neat, and I really appreciated.
I'm glad it worked.
That's how capitalism was described, because it can be a pretty overwhelming topic, and hard to understand. But seeing it visualized, and also recognizing that, you know, this is a human construct. It didn't come down from God. It's something that we as people have kind of invented, and we can imagine another way of being. It doesn't have to be just like this. And did you feel that as you were making the film?
I did. I definitely did. Yes, capitalism is all of our economic systems are man-made. We could set them up any number of ways. And the way that, you know, we can say, oh, it's really arbitrary the way the system is set up. I don't think it's arbitrary. I think one of the things that became clear to me is it's set up in a very specific way to serve people who set up the system. And so that is what it is doing. To say like, oh, capitalism isn't working, I think is misleading. Capitalism is actually doing exactly what it's been designed to do, which is to create a great deal of profit for people who have resources. And it's very, very hard for people who don't. I think that became very clear to me while making this mm-hmm. film, for sure.
And so what is your hope for this movie as it goes out into the world?
Yeah, I want everyone to see it. it should be everywhere. Well, we've been playing at film festivals, and it's been great. I mean, I said it's a little sad to be doing it all remotely. I've never been able to see the film with an audience. But my hope is we will be able to do that. And we just sold the film, and we'll be playing in theaters Labor Day weekend. So,
oh, wow. I don't
know exactly when, or I know when, I don't know where, like which cities exactly. But that's the plan. So you can check out our website. I think it's socialismmovie.com, or follow us on Facebook. And we'll definitely let people know if you miss it at the festival, how to catch it. Or if you saw it and you really want to make sure your friends, in Arizona see it, or some other state.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope that you'll be able to go out and actually interact with audiences at some point this year with the film. I mean, that would be great.
Yeah, it would be a real treat.
Yeah. So do you have other films in the works right now?
I do. I shot a film with my filmmaking partner Yoni two years ago on the UT LA teacher strike. So we're just in the middle of trying to finish editing that. So that was following the LA teachers when they all went on strike for 6 or 7 days. And that's a short. And then I have a few projects that I'm just starting to build up now. So we'll see where things mm-hmm. go.
Okay. Well, any final closing comments for our WORT listeners?
No, just thank you so much for having me, and thanks to the Wisconsin Film Festival for screening us, and I'm just so excited and honored. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much for joining me today. So today's show has been a two-part show about two movies that are playing at the Wisconsin Film Festival. In the first part of the hour, I was talking with Greta Wing Miller about her movie, How to Form a Union. And in this part of the hour, I've been speaking with Yael Bridge about her film, The Big Scary S Word. So you can find out more at wifilmfestival.org. And I think you have until through Thursday to watch these movies. Thanks so much to Rochelle and Shali for their help with today's show, and thank you for listening. Be sure to tune in tomorrow for A Public Affair with host Carousel Baird, and please stay tuned for Madison Bookbeat with Stu Levitan. Today, Stu is talking with Carl Hiaasen about his latest mystery, Squeeze Me, and trust me, you won't want to miss Carl Hiaasen. You are listening to WORT 89.9 FM, Madison.
Six foot six above sea level. I grab the mic because I like to take you to another mental level. Low power frequency radio modulation. The big sound from underground, another pirate station. We bring the truth to places truth is never heard before. We bring the sound communication of our tribal war. Dark vision fly by helicopters in the night. Attempt triangulation of our station in the fight. Straight from the base, deep down, low precision. High crime treason, we broadcast in sedition. Like the Wall Street morning, afternoon edition. Commandeering airwaves from unknown positions. Live and direct, becoming never pre-recorded. With information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and supported. Live and direct, becoming never pre-recorded. With information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and supported.
Michael, my dear.